Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Karen Reed, going to be interesting these next several months. Got a dead police officer, a murder charge, and a defense that claims a full-blown cover-up. But there's also something more complex at play here. Karen Reed's alleged actions after the death of John O'Keefe, the encrypted messages, the partnership with a blogger accused of harassment and witness intimidation, and the release of autopsy photos left a lot of people wondering, is this someone that's fighting for the truth or someone unraveling in real time? Today, we're looking at the emotional and psychological layers behind this very public spectacle, otherwise known as a legal battle. And joining a psychotherapist and author, Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, when we're looking at this, the emotional behavioral patterns that prosecutors have begun to outline, specifically with Reed and the blogger and the communications, is this someone in a desperate fight for their life that's just going to do and say anything that they can? You know, consequences be damned, and she's innocent, or is this someone that has consciousness of guilt and is going to be doing anything they can to manipulate what's around them? What's your thoughts on that very broad-based question?
Yeah, well, it sure is a lady who wants to win, and I don't think that there's any way of interpreting any of this stuff with the blogger Turtle Boy as anything other than she's really desperate to win and to have her version of the story told. Does that mean she's conscious of guilt? I don't think she knows exactly what happened, but she believes her story, whatever that may be at this point. It's evolved and changed over time.
How do you interpret the behavior? Because I don't know. I completely agree with you. I don't think she knows if she hit John O'Keefe or not. And the sad part about all this is it's not even the topic anymore. Now it's like it's turned into this whole other case when we're talking about the possible collusion, of talking about the witness intimidation allegations. And is she feeding him information? Well, you know, she was feeding him information, but was it with the intent to go and intimidate witnesses or potential jurors? What was all going on here? Is this someone who's just flailing, you know, their arms and everything's coming out? There was so much bad behavior that we've learned about, and it wasn't just an isolated incident. It wasn't I talked to this blogger one time and then he went off on his own thing. No, there's at least 40 plus hours of communication here. She's admitted to it in the doc that she'd talked to him for hours on end. It appears they continued this for a very long time. I don't know if they still might be. And also we have it with her own counsel communicating as well. Mm-hmm. That part apparently not getting into the trial, at least yet. But the stuff between her and him getting in. What the hell does that tell us? Because this is a pattern. This is not just, I'm shocked this guy's doing this stuff in my name.
Yeah, it is more time spent communicating than you see many married couples spending communicating. So you have to wonder what was the motivation on his end to be so incredibly enmeshed with her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are his fantasies about her? What kind of a crush is this? It's unfortunate because it had such a negative impact for other people in the community. He, I think, did a lot of harm.
Completely. I mean, and that's, I mean, what you had mentioned there about it, was there a crush? It does make you wonder, you know, what was it? Was there some alternative, or is this just, you know, is he just believing that he's a social warrior and a justice warrior and he's out there, you know, fighting the battle how he believes it's right, where most of us look at, you know, the way that to fight these things. No, harassing kids and people who have nothing to do with the crime and exposing all their information online isn't exactly a very effective way of doing it. It may make you feel really good in the moment, but it feels more like a toddler that's, you know, just threw a train at a teacher.
Yeah, it's really, really offensive behavior. And, you know, at what point is there an ethical problem with her attorneys seemingly validating a lot of it,
yeah,
if not all of it? Who knows?
I mean, and what does that say about the person that sits behind that? I mean, is that someone that has some sort of guilt going on there? Or is that someone that, if you accused her of anything, or if anything came up, she's going to do whatever is going to be in her best interest of self-preservation, whether it's being accused of murder or what have you?
Yeah, the sense that she has given in her interviews is that she will do anything to win. And that's, you know, of course, understandable to some degree. But when you get into this dirty way of treating other people, it's concerning. And it makes you wonder about, you know, her personality and other aspects, too. What does she do to get her way?
What do you make of the fact that they were using encrypted apps and messaging intermediaries for a piece of time there on something like this? I mean, I get, you know, privacy, you certainly want that. But again, intent is what we're, why are we hiding what we're communicating about? Mm-hmm. Why exactly is that going on?
Yeah, it gives it another layer of, what would we say? It's just being sneaky. And mm-hmm. and what is there that's so secretive, and what are they worried about? It has an odd feeling to it.
I know a lot of interpretation is going on, looking at the communications between the blogger and her as, you know, she's feeding him, you know, information, this or that. I mean, yes, that certainly seems to have happened. But was it about that, or is this someone who, speaking of Karen Reed, who suddenly had this supporter and this person giving her inordinate amounts of attention, more than most people would for anything, and just feeding her ego, feeding her narrative, feeding what's going to make her feel good in that moment? Because she wasn't in a good place. She's being accused of, mm-hmm. you know, murdering her boyfriend or hitting him at the least. And then there's this very vocal, very over the top personality that's just, no, you're, and I can only imagine what those conversations were like, but I'm sure it's a lot of, you're innocent, and, you know, feeding the ego mm-hmm. of Karen Reed. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's what led to, you know, the endless hours of it and the daily phone calls for, mm-hmm. you know, hours on end, as she described them in the doc. Was that more about just her getting that reassurance? You know, it reminds me of, like, sometimes a very vain, like, teenage girl or something like that, where it's just like, tell me I'm pretty, you know, and no end to it. I'm wondering if that's kind of what was going on there, even more than the idea of collusion or committing a crime, just this, you know, kind of primal need for adoration and an endless appetite for it as well, an insatiable appetite for being praised and told you're right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's a really good guess. And she certainly did seem to have a pattern. There was texting with the other guy right around the time that John O'Keefe died.
Mm-hmm.
When she was texting with the other guy, the flirty texts,
yeah.
And seemed to be a person that really has a strong need for attention and affirmation.
How does that play into this case in terms of the crime or the alleged crime? Does the attention show, or would that be something where they could use that as, you know, not necessarily the attention angle, but the strong personality angle of that, of you wrong me, I'm going to get really mad at you. Clearly, we could see the anger level in those voicemails, the 40, 50 plus that she left after she said she dropped off John O'Keefe. A lot of anger there, a lot of impulsivity there. Mm-hmm. And then we have the data that the car did back up. How is that going to read to a jury when you put all of the pieces together? Again, I don't think there's a super strong argument in terms of physical argument that he was necessarily struck by the vehicle, but there sure is a lot of arguments that can be made that this was someone who was very emotionally impulsive, very verbose with her emotions, and theoretically could have done something out of anger and, you know, not necessarily intentionally, but, you know, could have caused this accident when it's all put together.
Yeah, I can see why the authorities went down the path they went with this. There was a lot of evidence of erratic behavior, emotional intensity, abuse of alcohol, instability in the relationship. So I can certainly see why it's questioned. And that could certainly go along with what has happened after the trial, too. But does that mean she hit him, as you and I have said so many times? Probably not beyond a reasonable doubt. Can that be proven?
It's just, I'm wondering now if all of this bad behavior after the fact is going to get her convicted of second degree murder, when maybe it was not at all, but because of the actions afterwards. Murdaugh is what comes to mind. She's going to be tried on her personality more than she is on the actual crime itself at this point. I mean, that seems to be what a lot of the case was about in the first time. It was Proctor and his personality and his bad acts, not necessarily the evidence that that did exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
What do you feel a jury is going to... Or the new juror that they have brought on, or the former juror, I should say, that they've brought on as the new member of counsel for Karen Reed, who was in the courtroom. She was, I believe, released right at the end. And now she's going to be on the counsel for Karen Reed to help her with this case. What do you think she brings to the table in terms of, you know, her knowledge and just the psychology of behind the scenes of how those jurors were handling things in the first trial?
That is new to me somehow, Tony. I missed
yeah.
that.
It's a lot coming in.
I missed that piece.
But yeah,
that is absolutely fascinating. And I can't say I've ever heard of that happening.
No one has.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
No one has ever heard of this happening. It was questioned initially as like, is this even legal? Like, can you do this? Apparently it is. But yeah, you have someone who was a juror on the first trial, now has been retained and is part of her new counsel. Not necessarily, as far as we're aware, going to be getting up there and arguing in court, but able to bring some inside knowledge from, you know, the jury room. I would think that that would be somewhat valuable to the defense in terms of getting an idea of how people are interpreting, how the jurors are interpreting the presentations of evidence that are being put out there.
Yeah, 100%. What did people believe? What didn't they believe? And where, you know, where are the weaknesses in the state's case because of that? Yeah, that would be incredibly valuable to their cause.
There's just so many moving pieces to this. It makes you wonder still. I'm still wondering if we're going to see charges of some sort of collusion here, how that could affect this case, that could possibly delay the whole thing, even though jury selection is going on as we record this. But this could go on for quite some time. And then even after this one, maybe we'll have a third one on other charges. Mm. It's the case that does not end, and the case with far more questions than answers, without a doubt.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.